67. A Crushed Mouse. Ajay, looking pained but stoic, was seated on what Milgram said was a Biedermeier vanity stool in the bright tile cave of number 4's vast bathroom, towels spread beneath him, while Chandra went carefully at his waterfall with a pair of scissors. Milgram was in there with them, moving around as instructed, while Ajay, when he remembered to, studied him. Chandra, too, would periodically pause, observe Milgram, then start clipping again. Hollis found herself waiting for dialogue. "What is this?" Milgram asked, apparently noticing the shower for the first time. "The shower," Hollis said. "Keep moving," ordered Ajay. Milgram put his hands in the pockets of his peculiar new pants. "But would you do that?" asked Ajay.
"Quit moving,"
ordered Chandra, who'd stopped clipping.
"Me?"
asked Milgram.
"Ajay,"
said Chandra, brushing a wet black bit of stray waterfall from her black tunic. Her black lips looked particularly dramatic in this light. Hollis glanced back at Fiona, who was sitting at the foot of the bed, listening intently to Gareth, asking occasional questions, taking notes in a sticker-covered moleskin. Gareth had just had to break off, taking a call from the man who was building Pep's electric bicycle. This had resulted in Pep losing his curly stays frame, as it would have to be cold-bent to accommodate the engine hubs, something both the builder and Gareth clearly regarded as sacrilege. Gareth had opted for carbon fiber instead, but had then had to phone Pep and tell him, which had resulted in an agreement to go with dual engines. Hollis was reminded of watching a director prep for a music video, something the curfew had been largely able to avoid. She'd seen it later, though, via Inchmail and the various bands he'd produced, and she'd invariably found it far more interesting, more entertaining, than any final product. In this case, she still had very little idea of what Gareth intended to shoot.
"You go out now," she heard Chandra say, "and close the door. This is smelly."
She turned and saw Milgram headed in her direction, Chandra starting to shake an aerosol can of product.
"Keep your eyes closed," Chandra said to Ajay.
Milgram closed the door behind him.
"Are you okay?" Hollis asked. "Where have you been?"
"Suthak, with Fiona."
He sounded, she thought, like someone describing a spa weekend, an unaccustomed little smile.
"I'm sorry about Heidi," she said.
He winced. "Is something wrong?"
"She's fine. I mean, I'm sorry that she hurt Foley, made more trouble for you."
"I'm glad," he said. "Otherwise, they would have gotten us, gotten me anyway."
And suddenly he was weirdly and entirely present, a single entity. The sharp looker around corners merged seamlessly with his spacey, dissociated self.
"I wouldn't have gotten to go to Southwark."
For those few seconds, he was someone she hadn't met. But then he was Milgram again.
"That's a scary shower," he said.
"I like it.
I've never seen anything decorated this way."
He looked around at the contents of number 4.
"Me neither."
"Is it all real?"
"Yes, though there are some period reproductions. There's a catalog for each room."
"May I see that?"
Her iPhone rang.
"Yes?"
"Meredith, I'm in the lobby. I need to see you."
"I have guests."
"Alone," said Meredith. "Bring a jacket. She wants to meet you."
"Not my idea," interrupted Meredith. "Hers. When I told her what you said."
Hollis looked at Gareth, who was deep into it with Fiona. The bathroom door opened. Ajay stood there, the sides of his head sparsely covered with some kind of synthetic non-hair, randomly directional.
"Not very good, is it?"
"It's like the pubic hair of some huge, anatomically correct toy animal," said Gareth, delighted. "It's the wrong texture. But I have another that should do," said Chandra. "And I'll do a better job of application next time." "I'll be down in a minute," said Hollis to the iPhone. "Meredith," she said to Gareth. "I'm going down to see her."
"Don't leave the hotel," Gareth said, and went back to whatever he was explaining to Fiona.
Hollis opened her mouth, shut it, found number 4's leather-bound curiosity catalog for Milgram, then collected the hound's jacket,
her purse, and left, closing the door behind her. Avoiding the watercolors, she made her way through the green maze and found the lift waiting, clicking softly to itself. As it descended the black cage, she tried to make sense of what Meredith had said. The logical she was the hound's designer. But if that was the case, had Meredith been lying to her yesterday? Passing the ferret, she emerged into the sound of the lounge, evidently in full route now, that bounced so effectively down the marble stairs. Meredith was waiting near the door, where Robert ordinarily stood, though he was nowhere in sight. She wore a translucently ancient waxed cotton jacket over the tweed Hollis remembered from yesterday, more holes than fabric, the platonic opposite of Inchmail's Japanese Gore-Tex.
"You told me you didn't know how to contact her," Hollis said, "and you certainly didn't indicate that she was in London."
"I didn't know either one," Meredith said. "Inchmail. Clanny was giving me the gears at the studio because you'd promised to get him fresh kit if he helped you find her."
Hollis had forgotten about that.
"I did," she said.
"Inchmail was working on one of those charts he makes, the ones around the bottom of a paper coffee cup for each song. Is that simply more of his rubbish, or is it real?"
"Real."
"And of course he was concentrating or pretending to. And suddenly he said, 'I know her husband.' Said he was another producer, very good, based in Chicago. He'd worked with him. Said a name."
"What name?"
Meredith looked her even more firmly in the eye.
"I'd have to let her tell you that."
"What else did Reg say?"
"Nothing, not a word. Went back to his colored felts and his paper cup. But as soon as I got my hands on a computer, I Googled the name. There he was. Image search, 3 pages in, there she was with him. That was only a few hours after I saw you here."
"That turned into quite an evening," said Hollis.
"Did you quit?"
"I didn't get a chance. But my position on quitting remains the same. Stronger, if anything. I'm right off Big End, if you could say I was ever on him. A lot's happened.
I've mostly been on the phone myself, trying to reach her, through her husband. Couldn't reach him. Threw myself on Inchmail's mercy. Had George put it to him, actually."
"And?"
"She called me. She's here. She's been here for a few weeks. East Midlands, Northampton, looking at shoe factories, doing a boot."
And suddenly Meredith was smiling, then not.
"On her way back now."
Hollis was about to ask where to, but didn't.
"I can take you to her now," Meredith said. "That's what she wants."
"Why would—"
"Better she tells you. Are you coming or not? She's leaving tomorrow."
"Is it far?"
"Soho. Clammy has a car."
Which was Japanese, minute, and appeared to have been fathered by a Citroën de Chevaux, its mother of less distinctive lineage but obviously having attended design school. It had virtually no rear seat, so Hollis was folded in sideways now, behind Meredith and Clammy, watching a determined little rear wiper squeegee rain. Nothing could have been less like the Hilux. A tiny retro wagon, devoid of armor. Everything, in traffic, was larger than they were, including motorcycles. Clammy had bought it used, through a broker in Japan, and imported it, the only way to get one here. It was the dark, glossy gray of an old-fashioned electric fan, a shade Inchmail liked to refer to as a crushed mouse, which meant a gray with some red in it. She hoped other drivers could see them, though not if they were Foley's crew, whom she'd started to worry about when Clammy was turning into Oxford Street. Gareth's instruction to not leave the hotel had suddenly made a different sort of sense. She hadn't been taking all that very seriously. She'd felt like an observer, a helper, or a woefully unskilled nurse. But now, she realized, in this new economy of kidnapping, she herself could probably be quite valuable. If they had her, they'd have Gareth. Though they didn't, as far as she knew, know about Gareth. Though that depended, she imagined, on everyone in Big End's tiny immediate crew remaining loyal. Who was Fiona? She knew nothing about Fiona, really, except that she kept an eye on Milgram, an oddly personal one, Hollis thought. Actually, now that Hollis thought about it, as though she fancied him.
"Is it much further?" she asked.